Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Oracle Network.
We have an active shooter. We have an active shooter inside the warehouse.
Welcome to Active Shooter, a podcast that covers the whys, the hows, and the aftermath of active shooter and mass casualty events.
They have an active shooter in the building. A second call says they are being attacked.
I've been shot.
1-6-9-10, means we got shots fired. 415 AS up. Route 291, sounded like an automatic firearm.
Active shooter. Reports of an active shooter. Active shooter.
Active shooter. Mass casualty incidents.
Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Active Shooter, a podcast that may contain adult themes, explicit language, and graphic depictions of violence. Portions of this show may be traumatic for those under 18. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, there's been a shooting in the U.S. city of Indianapolis. Local media say multiple people have been taken to hospitals in the area. Police were called to respond to reports of shots fired at a FedEx facility on the southwest side of the city near Indianapolis International Airport. Now, police have confirmed that the gunman is dead and say they do not believe the general public is in immediate danger.
After a preliminary search of the grounds, inside and out, we have located 8 people at the scene with injuries consistent to gunshot wounds. Those 8 were pronounced deceased here at the scene.
The worldwide pandemic created so much tragedy and trauma that goes far beyond our physical health. Depression, anxiety and loneliness have run nearly as rampant as the virus that has stolen so many lives. The number of mass shootings that have occurred in the time of this pandemic have increased at an alarming rate. Whether the two are even remotely correlated may be debated by some, but one thing is certain. There is so much media coverage saturating our daily lives with the talk of viruses and protests, shootings, and politics that now more than ever, we must examine these terrible tragedies that continue to rock our worlds. We must not lose sight of the victims and the stories of those who survived these events, and we should never, ever stop trying to understand the why of it all. Perhaps if we can get to the root of the problem and continue shining a light on reasons for violence, then maybe we can get to a place where they become less frequent and altogether prevented. There is a very distinct line connecting so many mass shooters to a deep need for serious mental health treatment, and we need to continue discussing both. The shooting at the FedEx Indianapolis on Thursday, April 15th, 2021, was perpetrated by yet another individual who displayed a need for mental health treatment. His red flags may not be the kind that always predict a future killer, but they certainly cause enough concern that obtaining the proper mental health treatment should be automatic, provided as a means to prevent violence, rather than being purely reactionary.
Active Shooter, the podcast, is a High Five Holly production, and I'm your host, JT. If you've listened to our prior episodes, you know that the Active Shooter podcast team has taken the No Notoriety Pledge, and we will not be sharing the real name of the shooters that we cover. We will be giving the shooters a pseudonym and refer to them by that name throughout the episode. This will help in clearing up any confusion in the story, while remaining true to our pledge in not naming the shooter by their actual name. In today's episode, we will refer to the shooter
as Gary. Thursday, April 15th, 2021 was overcast, slightly rainy. It was a spring night in Indianapolis, Indiana. The FedEx Indy building, located about 5 miles from the Indianapolis International Airport, at 8951 Mirabel Road in Marion County, was operating at full capacity, as usual in the 300,000-square-foot building that was used primarily for sorting packages. On this day, not one of the nearly 100 employees were slightly prepared for the shocking and gruesome shooting that would change their lives forever going forward. 8 people went to work, believing they would return home after their shift. They would never see the light of another day, and they left home without ever knowing that saying, "I love you," or kissing their loved ones goodbye would be the last time. Most probably took those little daily opportunities to love our people for granted, as most of us do. 8 people were robbed of those future precious and insignificant moments, and it is utterly senseless. Another 7 individuals were injured in varying degrees, and they too must live a life that has been irrevocably changed. At approximately 11 p.m., 19-year-old Gary drove his Toyota Camry into the parking lot of the FedEx building. He was wearing either a hat or a hooded sweatshirt. It was the middle of shift change and lunch breaks, which seems to be a perfectly executed part of his plan.
Well, I was working a normal day at FedEx, and I was planning on working another shift that night with my friends, and so it was 11 o'clock at night when this incident happened.
He parked and walked around the back to the trunk, where he collected a Ruger AR-556 semi-automatic rifle and an HM-15F semi-automatic rifle. As Gary pulled the firearms from the trunk, he started firing.
When I hear 6 shots fired rapidly, and then I hear 10 shots, this is when I stand up, and I'm sitting on a bench. And so when I stand up, I see a man, a hooded figure. I was unable to see his face in detail. However, the man did have an AR in his hand, and he started shouting, and then he started firing at random directions. But at first, it was at his right, and I thought he saw me, and so I immediately ducked for cover.
Simultaneous to the start of the gunfire, employees were pulling into the parking lot for the start of their shifts. But once they saw Gary standing in the parking lot shooting a gun, they quickly reversed and fled as bullets were flying at the rear of their automobiles. Gary was shooting at cars as they drove away, and the drivers were terrified at what they just saw.
Opened my chips, got my sandwich, about to take a bite. He was about to take a bite out of his sandwich, and we heard loud metal clangs at first, because they didn't sound like gunshots at first. They made, because there was a loud clang after the first two, and then my buddy Levi stood up as he was like kind of squatting at the bench, and then looked over and out into the parking lot, didn't see anything yet, and then we heard 3 more shots, and then my buddy Levi saw someone running out of the building, and then more shots went off.
Some employees believed what they were hearing was simple fireworks. But that didn't really make sense. It was dark out, yet there was no flashing or booming in the sky. One person thought a car backfired.
We heard two gunshots from inside the building, and I did not witness anyone enter. I assumed it was a muzzle problem with a car, because we were I was outside of the building when this happened. And across from the building is the parking lot.
The terror each individual must have experienced when it dawned on them that they were being attacked must have been overwhelming. Gary shot for about 3 minutes straight before entering the building, where he walked into a locker room and began shooting again, striking more people.
Caller heard 10 shots from near the front of the entrance.
Mercifully, Gary was prevented from getting further inside the building by security barriers. There were metal detectors and a badge scanning system in place. Gary didn't work there, so he had no way in, which likely prevented many more deaths. Despite the security measures, employees were obviously petrified, and therefore, those that could safely run away hid underneath conveyor belts in the very interior of the building. A witness described hearing Gary yelling, yet they couldn't tell what he was saying.
I could not describe what exactly he was yelling about, however...
Because the company had a no-phone policy, not one employee inside the building had a cell phone on them, and couldn't immediately call 911. The shooting lasted under 4 minutes, though it probably felt like 4 hours to the survivors, likely knowing that it wouldn't be long before the police started showing up. Gary shot and killed himself, right there, in the locker room. The first 911 call came through at 11:07 p.m., and there were 97 911 calls placed. The first responding officers arrived very shortly afterwards. Almost immediately upon arriving, they located Gary with two rifles. Though the threat was gone, as Gary was very much dead by then. At 11:23 p.m., a radio call was dispatched from an officer stating that the potential body of the shooter was recovered, and he appeared to be dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. The first media briefing was held at 3 a.m. on Friday morning, where the police reviewed as much information with the public as they could, while maintaining the integrity of the investigation. Four of the deceased victims were found outside of the building, while the other four were discovered by the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, who were the initial responding officers. Five survivors were hospitalized for their injuries from the shooting, while an additional two were treated by EMS at the scene and released. Some of the wounded individuals were located inside their cars.
I don't know, she called us. I was asleep at home, so she said they're shooting in the FedEx. So we just drove from Brownsburg, and she got a shot on her left arm.
Is she okay?
She's fine. She's in the hospital now.
Did she know the person who did this?
She said, I don't know. She was in the parking lot sitting on the drive seat.
The Marion County Coroner's Office was on scene and worked as quickly as possible to identify the deceased. Four of the victims were members of the Sikh community, though the investigation has shown that doesn't appear to be a motive for the attack.
2 to 3 people shot at this time. The reference that ran my caller said it was a white male in a black hoodie armed with a shotgun. She never saw him leave the building. She's no longer on scene.
Person shot. He is outside in the parking lot. He said he's in a black Buick Rendezvous. EMS is en route.
Suspect ran into the field right across from the parking lot.
Suspect ran into the field right across from the parking lot. State approximately 5 people shot.
Additional cars, just information if you're not clear on Southwest. They have an active shooter currently at FedEx. They're reporting at least 5 people shot.
352 is just passing 465 and I-70. I'll set up on the west perimeter. Whoever's behind me, stick with me.
Multiple people shot at FedEx at 8951 Mirabel Road. Information only at this time, 2317.
I'm getting information that he's still inside the building from somebody pulling off the lot.
Control, we got another one down in front of the building.
Control, that subject was possibly 10-0.
Subject possibly 10-0.
told there's two more down in the car in the parking lot and a white Toyota Camry.
Two more down in the car in the parking lot, white Toyota Camry.
Control, make sure Hampton Inn and Hilton Garden knows and they can control their sites, lock them down.
Control, advise Eskenazi will have multiple patients. Advise them to be ready. Advise St. Vincent's.
10-4, we're calling the hospitals.
311, we need somebody to clear the roadways at the entrance there. There's too many cars stacked up. We're not going to be able to get ambulances in here. Keep a route coming in. Keep a route open coming in.
There's a rifle inside here.
Who has located casualties?
David 323 has the first three shot, conscious, barely.
All right, I think we got the suspect here inside. It looks like he's got a gunshot wound to the head, 10-0. Two rifles here. So, unless there's another person out, this is going to be our suspect here.
Four more down inside the building.
Attention, all units, there is only one shooter, gunshot wound to the head. He is down.
We're ready for casualty location.
They have been, have the medics come to the north side of the FedEx building, please.
Control, we've got one confirmed person shot in the center of the lot, one confirmed person shot on the far west side of the lot.
10-4, one in center of lot, one far west side of lot. Keyless, are we ready for the comm van?
Got one confirmed shot in the A&D office.
Keyless, establish a chain to start getting people out.
Go ahead. I told medics to come to the north side of the parking lot. I told them that's where it's safe.
Okay, we'll be evacuating people out the door close to U301. I think it's going to be door 4.
Evacuating out door 4.
Obviously, we need a team to corral these people as they come out. We're searching them as they come out.
352 control to the people out, to the officers outside the building. A lot of civilians are coming out. We've done a cursory search on them. Search them again.
Edward 321, control.
Okay, we're batting them down as they come through the entryway here.
A fireman's with us, but we need medic back here so she can get transported.
So we have this building secure on the outside. 311 to all units on FedEx. Do we have any other living victims that need an ambulance?
Yeah, I got one out here by the Decatur Ladder 71.
Keen and a search team are clearing the building now.
As of right now, we've had no one show up to Eskenazi. We're just staging here. Like I said, I don't think they're going to have enough cars to follow ambulances down to the hospital. So we just came down because we border their district. Like I said, right now, they're looking or needing more manpower to man the perimeter around the FedEx facility. So I don't know if ERG is going to get pulled down there or not.
The police presence was massive. 105 officers from Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, or IMPD, responded to the scene, and the Indiana State Police, or ISP, assisted in the investigation. A family reunification center was established in the ballroom of the Holiday Inn Express Hotel. Witnesses were transported to the hotel by Indigo buses to be reunited with their loved ones. The ballroom immediately became uncontrolled as family members desperately tried to locate each other. People quickly grew exasperated after waiting for hours for answers and direction. Victim service units, advocates, and chaplains came to the hotel reunification center straight away, offering comfort to families that waited throughout the night for their loved ones to be questioned and released. People were waiting, dressed fully in their nighttime pajamas. The shooting happened in the late evening hours, and most family and friends of the victims, witnesses, and survivors were home sleeping. Refreshments like chips, Slim Jims, pizza, and beverages were brought in, anything that could be done to comfort those in crisis, including the first responders.
Active shooter, reports of an active shooter, active shooter,
active shooter, mass casualty incidents.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Active shooter. Reports of an active shooter. Active shooter.
Active shooter. Mass casualty incidents.
It is estimated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, that 73% of mass shooters target a location that they are familiar with, which appears to be the case here. Investigators have concluded that Gary specifically chose the FedEx building because he was formerly employed there. Despite this employment connection, there was no animosity between Gary and his former employer, certainly no reason for such a brutal and vicious attack. It seems he chose this building and time because he understood the layout and knew when the shift change occurred. After the shooting scene was contained, police investigators jumped into action and were seen removing boxes and computer equipment from Gary's home. A thorough review of all collected evidence proved that the shooting wasn't prompted by racial bias or apparent racism. It was a pure coincidence that some of the victims were members of the Sikh community. Gary just wanted to kill. It was that simple. He wasn't a disgruntled former employee. He wasn't anti-Semitic, or fueled by hate towards any particular minority group. Gary's motivation for such a deadly act was to commit murder and then kill himself. That motivation seemed to be driven by a need to show the world that he was a real man, as evidenced by his ability to murder innocent people. As if that could ever impress a rational or sane individual. There was obviously no connection between Gary and any single victim, which seems impossible given that he formerly worked for this company. Yet over 120 people were interviewed by police, and that investigation produced little to no other clues. It seems that he researched other potential shooting sites, but ultimately settled on the FedEx building. Officials indicated during a press conference that the shooting was, quote, an act of suicidal murder, and that Gary killed himself, quote, in a way he believed would demonstrate his masculinity and capability while fulfilling a final desire to experience killing people. 19-year-old Samaria Blackwell was the youngest of four children in her family. The baby, if you will. An energetic and thoughtful young person, she was known to be competitive, especially when playing soccer and baseball. She was a straight A student that graduated high school the year before the shooting that robbed her of the bright future Samaria so deserved. Her family says that her greatest passion was helping others and planned to become a police officer. Samaria will be deeply missed. Carly Smith was also just 19 years old when she was senselessly murdered. She, too, graduated high school from George Washington High School the year prior. Carly attended Crispus Attucks High School before transferring to GWHS, where she was a softball player. A true athlete, Carly played basketball and volleyball in middle school, too. Everyone described her as a real bright light in this world, and she had an extraordinary sense of humor. Taken from this world far too soon, Carly will be missed by all that she touched. Amarjeet Sekhon immigrated to the United States in 2004 and moved to Indianapolis to be closer to her family in 2019. She was known to be something of a workaholic, but she couldn't help it, and her work habits are likely the reason she was the breadwinner in her family. Amarjeet was extremely active and always on the go. Survived by her husband and sons, ages 13 and 19, Amarjeet will be missed. 50-year-old Yasvinder Kaur was just preparing to leave her shift when she was brutally murdered, without reason. She immigrated to the United States in 2018 and was also the main income source for her family. Yasvinder had two children, a son and daughter, who were still living in India when they tragically lost their beloved mother. She worked very hard on the 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. shift, and regularly sent money to support her family in India. The loss of Yasvinder will be keenly felt by all her friends and family. 32-year-old Matthew Alexander was an Avon High School graduate and played baseball as the pitcher during his time there. Described as responsible, caring, and honorable, Matthew was loved by everyone that knew him. He was a serious basketball fan and, in fact, had an entire room in his house dedicated to memorabilia and collectibles. Matthew was taken well before his time, and he will be greatly mourned. The eldest victim, 74-year-old John Weissart, was a retired engineer who was working at the FedEx building to earn some extra income. He had been employed there as a package handler for almost 5 years. John was married to the love of his life and was looking forward to celebrating his 50th wedding anniversary in the fall. Such a long-lasting marriage is rare, and it's truly a devastating loss, not just for his wife, but also for the rest of the world. 19-year-old Gary was born on August 30th, 2001, and lived in a modest home with his family that included a stepsister. Gary grew up loving the outdoors and particularly enjoyed going fishing. He was a thrill seeker who loved roller coasters. However, his stepsister describes Gary as isolated and indicated that mental illness ran in his family. Indeed, Gary's mom says that he began battling with OCD as early as age 3, though he wasn't diagnosed until he was 10. Gary frequently expressed feelings of loneliness and had difficulties controlling his anger. In 2004, when Gary was only 3, which also directly correlates with his onset of OCD tendencies, his father committed suicide. Despite the apparent link, Gary says that his dad's suicide didn't affect him that much. He claims to have been so young that he had very little memory of his father. This may be true, but trauma can impact an individual even without vivid recollections of the past. His mother eventually went on to remarry, bringing a stepsister into his life. As mentioned, when he was 10, Gary was diagnosed with an anxiety disorder and disruptive disorder, and was prescribed 5 milligrams of Lexapro as a result. Lexapro is a drug that is commonly used to treat depression and anxiety. About a month after he started the drug, Gary was also diagnosed with OCD. This occurred after his mom discussed Gary's, quote, odd behavior with his doctor. The odd behaviors included Gary rocking back and forth when watching TV, insisting on wearing 3 pairs of shorts at a time, and becoming severely agitated when his routine was disrupted. If the latter occurred, Gary would spend hours getting prepared for the day, oftentimes resulting in his constant tardiness at school. His agitation quickly turned to anger, and Gary would become disrespectful to his mother. In 2013, Gary was arrested for the first time. His charges included criminal confinement, battery, and intimidation. Gary was accused of pushing and kicking his mom before he grabbed 2 kitchen butter knives and tried to stab her. She sustained minor injuries, and Gary was immediately sent to a juvenile detention facility, where he was held for several hours before being released back into his mother's care. Gary had to attend juvenile court proceedings and was ultimately sentenced to probation and counseling. A year later, in 2014, Gary started homeschooling, and during that time, a social worker was making twice-weekly home visits, checking in on Gary and his progress. Things seemed calmer for a brief period, and Gary eventually returned to in-school learning. On June 22nd, and again on June 30th of 2015, Gary was required to undergo a speech and therapy assessment. The assessment was ordered after the student support services raised concerns about Gary accessing inappropriate content online. Furthermore, it was reported that Gary talked incessantly, often getting reprimanded. In addition, Gary, at 14 years old, still needed assistance from his mother in selecting clothing to wear to school. To be clear, he dressed himself fine, but needed his mom to actually pick out the clothes he wore. Gary preferred loose-fitting clothes, though he detested wearing jeans and flatly refused to don anything that was name brand. Gary would wear the same shirt day in and day out, until his mother had to force him to change. Oftentimes, she had to bring to Gary's attention that he was becoming odorous due to his prolonged wearing of the same clothes. Other issues Gary had with his manner of dress included his refusal to wear bright colors. He didn't want to stand out. And never tying his shoes because he just couldn't be bothered to do so. Anytime new clothing was bought for him, Gary immediately removed every single tag, including the tags with care instructions. Another constant struggle was Gary's eating habits. He was very choosy about what he ate, and he primarily would only consume deep-fried foods, chips, and strawberry ice cream. Between ages 6 and 9, Gary was obsessed with toy cars, and loved playing with them. He could always be seen carrying around a toy car, and would meticulously line them up in a row, becoming enraged if someone messed with the perfect line of cars. Gary could throw quite the temper tantrum, and his outbursts were escalating as he grew up. In the later years, after about age 10, his fixation transferred to Lego, especially Star Wars Lego. Again, if any of his specially placed Lego were moved or somehow toppled, Gary would lose his mind, his anger boiling over. In addition to his cars and then Legos, Gary collected odd items such as candy wrappers and rocks. His other great interest was anime movies, and although he couldn't understand the languages, older German and Russian songs were his favorite. Isolated was a mostly apt description for Gary. He had one friend when he was about 14 years old, but otherwise, he rarely spent his time with others, avoiding conversation or any other kind of social interactions. When Gary underwent the assessment in high school, he admitted to thinking about suicide, but mainly when he was under intense pressure. Without explaining his coping mechanism, Gary indicated that he simply got through whatever his stressors were. In his later years of high school and after graduation, Gary's violence was becoming more apparent. He was also growing bigger and becoming stronger, which made his mother increasingly worried about her own safety. Her son never socialized and had no close friends. By 2020, Gary had completely stopped taking his Lexapro and other medications. Later that same year is when he worked for the FedEx Indianapolis location, from August to October of 2020. Gary was fired because he simply stopped showing up for work. Otherwise, there were no issues or concerns between employer and employee.
He was last employed in 2020.
However, there were issues in Gary's life. As we are about to discuss, Gary's mental health seriously declined in the early half of 2020. Perhaps if greater intervention was done, this case might not have happened. On March 3rd, 2020, Gary's mom called 911 because she feared her son was going to commit suicide by cop. The reason for her concern is that the previous day, March 2nd, she and Gary went shopping at an army surplus store called the Gun Bunker, which is where he purchased some meals ready to eat, also known as MREs. Gary also bought a shotgun. This certainly seems to be an off purchase for the angry and sometimes violent young man who put her in a constant state of fear. However, Gary's mom later explained that because her son was 18 years old, he could buy the gun with or without her. At least with her, she was aware of what he had and what he was up to. At least, she thought so, though she was painfully wrong. Even though Gary wasn't able to purchase ammunition for the shotgun, the store was out. His mother was concerned for her safety. You see, she asked Gary what he intended to use his new gun for. And as soon as the words escaped her mouth, Gary was outraged. He made a fist in her direction and actually struck her in the arm, telling his own mother to shut up. Gary threatened his mother, that he planned to aim the unloaded shotgun at a police officer, so the officer would have to shoot Gary, who presumed he would instantly die. Though she assisted in helping Gary obtain his weapon, she deep down knew it wasn't right, and she needed to get that gun out of his possession. The next best thing was to report the situation to the juvenile courts, who placed Gary on an immediate detention mental health temporary hold. Gary was taken to the Sidney and Lois Eskenazi Hospital for an evaluation, yet he only lasted 2 hours before calling his mom and telling her that she needed to come back and pick him up, or else he would leave on his own accord and would walk home. Gary's shotgun was removed from the home, and he was later interviewed by an FBI agent based on the items discovered, which included apparent internet searches for white supremacist websites. Because of his mental health breakdown and evidence collected, Gary was handcuffed and transported to the hospital for an evaluation. As he was being escorted away, Gary shakily said to the officers, quote, "Please just turn the power strip off on my computer. I don't want anyone to see what's on it." An alarming statement, to be sure, and all the more reason the evaluation was the correct move. When police further talked with Gary, he really downplayed the suicide attempt and the severity of his depression, indicating that he might benefit from outpatient counseling. Gary's medical records noted that he wished to die by suicide by cop, yet he felt fine. Those two are at complete odds with one another. Gary's mom most certainly didn't believe her son was okay, and pleaded with the police to take Gary's gun. She thought there was enough evidence to do so, and further, she felt that her son should be red flagged, which we will discuss in greater depth later. The police weren't in agreement with her, though, saying that this situation didn't fall under the red flag law, because they took the firearm and the family agreed not to attempt to retrieve it back from the police. Because they agreed not to try to get the gun back, police never filed a petition that is required under these circumstances. The petition must state why police had probable cause to confiscate the weapon. The failure to file the proper paperwork resulted in Gary's ability to purchase additional firearms. He bought the HM Defense HM-15F in July and the Ruger AR-556 in September. Both were bought legally and using stimulus money that Gary received from the federal government.
It starts with the prosecutor, and then they ultimately submit it to the courts and to a judge.
And it was never submitted?
That's correct. It did not get into court. He did not make it into that red flag system. Although we kept the gun that we seized, he was still able to go out and legally purchase other firearms.
It seems that Gary had another fetish, this one being more inappropriate than his military fixation. He was consumed with all things My Little Pony. The last post Gary made on Facebook read, quote, "I hope I can be with Applejack in the afterlife. My life has no meaning without her." Applejack is one of the main characters in the My Little Pony series. The post included a snapshot of the cartoon pony and went up less than 1 hour before he executed a petrifying murder that caused so much destruction. Gary had two Facebook profiles, both of which are deleted now, but both contained a significant amount of My Little Pony photos and memes. It seems that Gary was fully enthralled with the fantasy world, enjoying video games like Halo, Minecraft, and Call of Duty. He played those games online with random strangers, though there didn't appear to be any reports of issues within the online gaming community. At one point, Gary attempted living on his own, but wasn't successful and moved back home. His main interests were all things military. There were nearly 175,000 files searched on his computer that was seized by police, and just under 200 of those files were related to the German military and German Nazi topics.
Active shooter, reports of an active shooter, active shooter,
active shooter, mass casualty incidents.
Active shooter, reports of an active shooter, active shooter,
active shooter of mass casualty incidents.
Gary's mental health took a dark turn in 2021, and he continued to be unbalanced. He was so obsessed with the military, but feared he would not be accepted due to the FBI having a file on him from the 2020 breakdown. A year after that episode, on March 19, 2021, Gary's mom took him to the Midtown Westside Clinic for emergency counseling, where they waited for over 4 hours to be seen. The clinic simply didn't have time for Gary. 3 days later, he met with a social worker and explained that, quote, "I can get very, very angry." The social worker's note indicated that Gary lacked empathy and didn't seem to care about other people. He was deemed to be a moderate suicide risk, and a, quote, "suicide plan" was established, where if Gary was having suicidal thoughts, he would know what to do. This young man displayed every single red flag and sign that he was in desperate need of intensive mental health treatment. Yet, he was essentially shuffled through the system without any serious consideration. At least, that's how it appears in the aftermath. On March 31st, 2021, Gary met with yet another social worker, and told this one much the same as the last, admitting that the incident with the FBI the year before was traumatic and upsetting for him, and he even admitted to trying to hang himself afterwards. Gary's final counseling session with his mom was on April 14th, 2021, the day before the shooting. Gary's mom attended this session because she was deeply concerned about him and felt he needed continuing treatment. She hoped to use the appointment time to urge Gary to keep going. There were several more appointments scheduled, but as we know, Gary would never make those sessions. Perhaps one of the most egregious oversights in this case is the failure to place Gary on the red flag list. There may be technicalities that prevented Gary from qualifying for this list, but if that is the case, then the fine details of the law ought to be revised, or each situation should be assessed on a case-by-case basis. The red flag law is also known as the Jake Laird Law, who is the police officer it is named for. For background, on August 18, 2004, a man went berserk, using a rifle and two handguns to murder his mother before opening fire on the entire neighborhood. As soon as police arrived on scene, this man began shooting at them too. Immediately after Officer Laird exited his patrol vehicle, he was shot and killed. The bullet struck him in the cheek, just above his bulletproof vest. After a shootout with the other officers, the man was killed. 4 additional police officers were wounded, but survived. Several months before this deadly shooting, on January 20th, 2004, officers were dispatched to the man's home after he became aggressive with paramedics. You see, the man was schizophrenic and was off his medication, enough so that he was in a full-blown manic episode. He was placed into a mental detention facility at St. Francis Hospital, and each of his guns, which were numerous, were confiscated, along with all ammunition. After he was released from the hospital, he inquired about retrieving his firearms. This man wanted his guns back, though police tried everything to prevent this from happening. They exhausted every avenue, yet there was no legal authority to stop them from returning the guns as requested. As shocking as this is, there was truly nothing police could do, so the weapons were returned in March of 2004. If such a law existed then, Officer Laird might be here today. The red flag law allows police to seize guns from mentally unstable and dangerous individuals. The confiscation can be carried out with a warrant that is based on probable cause that leaving the weapons in the individual's possession is a danger to themselves and the public. In extreme cases, the seizure can be made without an immediate warrant, but it is later subjected to the court's approval. Besides Indiana, several other states have instituted variations of the red flag laws. There is, however, one loophole that should be promptly corrected. A red flag case could stay open for several months, while the gun owner can collect their own evidence to bolster their case. As the case is pending, there is nothing preventing said gun owner from purchasing additional weapons, including guns. To be clear, this podcast isn't trying to litigate gun control in the telling of these stories. We only wish to present these stories honoring the victims while examining what, if anything, could be done to prevent the shooting. The red flag laws appear, on the surface, to be a legitimate, reasonable means of trying to minimize the number of mass shootings we see on a near weekly basis. It is worth looking further into. We all have the unique ability to help prevent such a catastrophic event from happening, if we keep our eyes and ears open and never hesitate to report when something, or someone, just doesn't seem right. It is our sincerest wish that there will be no more active or mass shooting stories to tell. We pray that love will prevail over hate.
Too many have died! We should say to ourselves, not one more!
In the meantime, we urge our listeners to stay aware of your surroundings and keep in touch with your loved ones. If you see something, say something. You never know how many lives you'll be saving. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Active Shooter, the podcast. Remember, if you see something, say something. There's no telling how many lives you may be saving. A huge thank you to Darren Curtis, who composed some of the music used in this episode. Check him out at darrencurtismusic.com. DarrenCurtis. Music.com.
Active Shooter. Reports of an active shooter. Active shooter.
Active shooter with mass casualty incidents.
Make sure to check us out on social media. We have a discussion group on Facebook. Just search for Active Shooter, the podcast discussion group. You can also find us on Instagram at Active the Podcast and Twitter at Podcast Active. For just $1 a month, you can get access to ad-free episodes, early release episodes when available, and a shout-out on the show. Just go to patreon.com/activethepodcast. Thank you, and be safe.